The endless parade of time. Who can say what fruits the future will see ripen? We can only keep looking towards
tomorrow's world with Isla Christensen and Stella Huggins on 95BFM.
Hey Earthlings,
I'm Stella Huggins.
And I'm Isla Christensen. Welcome back to Tomorrow's World,
where we want to look at some big ideas of science and society, with a focus on what we as humans will be impacted by and can influence around this world on this Earth rock that we call home.
This week we'll be talking to Molly Alton, a rural compliance officer for the Hawke's Bay Regional Council, who also lives on a farm with her partner. Today she offers her unique perspective on the recent protest by farmers about the amounts of regulations being placed on the industry to conserve our waterways.
I'm Molly. I'm currently working as a rural compliance officer for Hawke's Bay Regional Council while also living off my partner on a farm out in rural Hawke's Bay. I'm here to cover both sides of the story of what farmers are facing and why these regulations are occurring.
You're living, breathing it, actually on it. I guess maybe what's most prominent at the moment is to look at what people will have seen in the news or might have been stuck in town behind a tractor is the farming protest. What exactly is going on?
The protest that you would have seen or may have heard about on Friday last week was organised by a group of volunteers who go by the name Groundswell. And so they, a group of rural professionals and farmers who came together to advocate for farmers and growers in rural communities and the impending amount of regulation that is really just got a bit too much, really, in their opinion, where there's a number of different regulatory actions that are being imposed from central government that farmers are struggling to comprehend and keep up with, because at the moment these things are changing day by day, week by week, so it's really hard to get a grip on exactly what farmers are going to be required to do and have a plan in place.
There's been a myriad of voices competing for attention during the protests, which has made it hard to understand what the real cause of the controversy has been. Molly clears this up for us, breaking down the changes to the Freshwater Management Act, which have members of the primary industry so frustrated with the government.
Essential Freshwater Package, which was released from central government in September last year, incorporates a whole number of factors, not just on farm, but essentially wanting to see within a generation improvements and reversing some of this degradation that has occurred on our freshwater ecosystems and habitats. It may seem like, you know, a pretty short time frame, but I think the more momentum that we can get as farmers and as regulators, the more practice we get at these sorts of implementing change and implementing best management practice, the faster we'll see these improvements to our freshwater ecosystems. So it incorporates a number of different regulatory actions for farmers, such as changes to the way that farmers will graze cattle and animals in the winter, which is known as intensive winter grazing. There's also changes to stock exclusion requirements, where in the past there's been no nationwide regulatory enforcement for farmers to exclude their cattle from waterways. But one thing that I see in this essential freshwater package as being a real positive is what's called freshwater farm plans. And so that's essentially by the end of also 2025 for each pastoral farm over 20 hectares or each cropping farm over 5 hectares has to have one of these freshwater farm plans to address the inherent risks on each property. Ultimately, part of the reason why farmers were protesting because there's just so much in such a short amount of time, and to get your head around that sort of thing is really hard. It's hard for us to do in council, let alone one man band farming operation.
We asked Molly if a nationwide blanket approach is the best way to go, or if regulation should be contextual based on specific environments.
And the fact that it is a nationwide approach and everything has to be the same across the country. One thing that the Essential Freshwater Package has done is required regional councils by 2025 to have notified regional plans which address freshwater in what's called te mana o te wai, so acknowledging the vitality of freshwater and what it provides for the people and our ecosystems and native flora and fauna, things like that. So in a way, the essential freshwater does look like a nationwide approach, but really it's just setting those bottom lines for regional councils to then go and implement at a regional focus.
So farming planners may not always be on the ground, which can lead to disparities about what works in theory and what works in practice.
We asked Molly about the rural-urban divide and how this contributes to misunderstandings about the goals of the protest and the city dwellers' removed perspectives about where their food comes from.
You brought up a really good point of rural-urban divide, and I think that's really where that communication is lost. Yes, you can put good news stories, yes, you see bad news stories in the media, but if, say, living in the city, you're not going out and maybe visiting your auntie and uncle who live on a lifestyle block, or just really making the effort to see where our food comes from, how it's produced. Like, historically, everyone knew someone who was on a farm, and I think now with urbanisation and a lot more people moving into cities and less opportunities occurring in our rural settings, or, you know, just inherently rural centres, has really taken away from that connection back to the land or back to the farming route. There are a lot of industry schemes that encourage that best management practice for environmental outcomes, but then it's also things that just make sense to do on farm, where stock exclusion is the perfect example of that, where as part of the essential freshwater regulations, you have to be fencing off stock access from wide rivers. So, for example, here on farm, we have quite a wet farm with quite incised streams, gullies. A lot of these have been fenced off historically just because the danger to stock of these areas, if we're losing, you know, half a dozen lambs down a gully, one, it's terrible for the animals' welfare and fix the bottom line at the end of the day.
You actually touch on a really good point of, I guess, the economy there, and perhaps in a wider sense with capitalism pressures where everything maybe can come back to. Well, let's take New Zealand, for example. In COVID-19, we've seen that imports and exports, you can't rely on them for the economy. We see, especially in agriculture, that New Zealand is exporting a significant amount of their produce. Is this something that you think needs to shift in the future? We can't just rely on this perhaps constant trend to continue to grow. Do we need to rethink our economy in this area? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think New Zealand, just, you know, thinking about where we come from, we're just such a small little country in the corner of the globe. It's kind of inevitable for us to rely on exports because we are a primary producing country. I mean, that counts for, like, pine trees as well. If we're still going to be utilising our land, whether that's through pastoral farming, cropping, or pine trees alone, you know, if the government's 1 billion trees program really aimed to plant more pine trees and take away our primary production, at the end of the day, they're both resulting in export.
Molly talks about the inevitability of New Zealand being a primary producing country and how much our economy relies on exports. Since we can't change that in a hurry, we've got to continue our ingenuity streak and quickly figure out ways that we can farm sustainably while keeping exports viable. We asked Molly how soon she thinks New Zealand will adapt to technologies like vertical farming.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if New Zealand ever wants to, you know, make its mark and continue to, you know, hold itself to a primary producing country, then we have to move with the times. Obviously, we're no longer towing carts with horses and things like that. So, and the New Zealand primary industry sector has been pretty well renowned for its ingenuity and for its overcoming issues just due to our isolation. So I think New Zealand has really good grounds to be world leading in that innovative sector. Yeah, it's almost a generational thing though, I think. The more young people we can get excited about the primary sector in New Zealand and excited about the resources that New Zealand has to work with currently, then to build on and create a more advanced, efficient, sustainable future, then absolutely. It's just a matter of getting people excited about it, really, because it's pretty exciting, some of the stuff that's coming out, especially to do with, like, genetics and how genetics can affect methane emissions from dairy cows, or how, like, feed efficiency in sheep can also affect a sheep's methane emissions. So getting into that climate change space at the moment.
Molly brings up a groundbreaking strategy here, the technique of genetic modification through breeding stock and reducing methane emissions.
Year 13 biology alumni will probably remember the concept of selective breeding, which is exactly what it sounds like. Selecting the most viable individuals for a particular goal, in this case stock, that produce the least methane emissions, and breeding them to create new populations of animals that fit that goal.
In a Spanish study that ran for 7 years and ended in 2020, found that through this method alone that methane emissions from cattle could be decreased 20% in 10 years.
Molly emphasises the importance of young talent and young thinkers joining the rural farming workforce to continue looking for regulation, not restriction.
Yeah, it's just a matter of the more brains, the more solutions there's going to be. But I guess just touching on that as well, one thing, if we're taking it back to the reason why those protests occurred on Friday, is that farmers honestly believe that they are an innovative sector as well. So getting imposed all of these, this pile of regulations, and it really takes away that ingenuity, that innovation that farmers could bring to the surface and bring to the table to be able to overcome some of these environmental challenges.
So move over critics. There's a new wave of thinkers ready to collaborate with the earth.
A connection to the process of your food's production can be game-changing when it comes to understanding policy and controversies like the farmers' protests over the past week.
So think about that after your next burger in town.
Thanks so much to Molly for chatting to us this week, and see you next episode.
Stay critical, Earthlings.
Looks like everything's gonna be all right.
Tomorrow's World with Isla Christensen and Stella Huggins on 95 BFM.